For those of you who don't know, my name is Jared. I get to preach about once a month or so. Usually there's three or four different people that preach within the course of a year. And Christians usually, he preaches the majority of the time, but he's away this weekend. And actually, Matt is preaching next week, and we're starting a new series. So I'm going to be up here a few times, and Matt's going to be up here a few times in the next month. And then Christian will be back up here a month from now or so. We're going to start a new series tonight. But before I get into that, I want to say just a few things about this community again. Matt mentioned in the beginning that the mission of this community is to be a community of grace where people come to know Christ. And I want all of us here tonight to know that what's happened here in the last 5 or 6 years is nothing less of extraordinary and powerful and awesome. What God has done here since this community founded 5 or 6 years ago is absolutely amazing. And I want all of us to know and to hear and understand tonight that what we're doing here in this community is important and real and a task that God has given us. I was thinking about, even in the last week or so, how wrapped up my life has been in the life of this whole community. A week ago, Mike got up and spoke about this a few minutes ago. I got to go on a men's retreat with a group of 25 men from ages 20 to probably 55. And during the course of this week, I got to hang out with piles of high school students and meet with a high school leadership team and have real powerful friendships with people that if it wasn't for God and if it wasn't for this community that God's working in, I would have no contact with. People I wouldn't know. But God has brought us all together here for a purpose and a mission here at Outreach Red Bank. Think about that. If you've been here for any amount of time, think about the people you've come to know and ask yourself, would I know these people if I wasn't involved in the life of this community? Would I know these people if it wasn't for God? What you will see is that God has brought us together. I played softball with a group of people Friday night from this community. We got destroyed. I anticipate getting destroyed in the future. But what's happening here is incredible. And I hope that you realize that, because what God does in the lives of people who surrender themselves to him is nothing short of extraordinary. And that's what I want you to know tonight and hear tonight before I get up and preach what I'm going to talk about. Because of that, what we do on Sundays, what we gather here to do is to rejoice and declare and to thank God for his goodness and what he's done in our lives. And each week we come and assemble. Of all the things that go on during the week, we come here together and we rejoice of what God's doing in this community and what God's doing in our lives. And we come and we pray and we sing and we rejoice. And also, we come and we are addressed by the scriptures and hear how we're going to move forward in this community. What will we be doing in the future? How will we grow and know Christ more and more? And how will we draw others to Christ? And that's the hope tonight. Our hope tonight is that we would open up the scriptures, that we would learn more tonight about what it means to know Christ and to grow closer to him, and what it means and how we're going to live in such a way that we declare who Christ is to this world and draw others closer to him as well. All right. Tonight, we're starting a new series that's going to answer one simple question. And that question is, who do we belong to? That's going to be the question we dwell on for a while. Maybe that's a question you've never asked yourself. Maybe that's a question you haven't really thought about. Maybe you've thought about it a lot and have a clear, easy answer to that. But maybe that's a question you've never even sat and thought about. Who do I belong to? Maybe if you asked your friends, you would get very different answers. Maybe you'd get no answer. Maybe your friends have never thought about that question. Well, tonight, we're going to begin looking at that question. And tonight, our hope is to have an answer to that question. And then the following month or so, we're going to look at what the implications of the answer to that question are. Because how you answer that question is hugely important for how you live your life. If you answered that question one way, you will live your life completely differently than if you answered it another way. The answer to that question is important. So that's what we're going to be looking at over the next few weeks. Now, I want to begin by taking us back to the Greco-Roman world, the time when the New Testament scriptures were written. If you asked people in that time period who they belonged to, they would have a very, very clear answer. So what I want to do tonight is have us all kind of put our imagination hats on and go back to the Greco-Roman world and try to think through what life would have been like for a common person, for people like us in the Greco-Roman world. So to do that, I'm going to give us a few slides that Juan's going to put up. All right. Now, hold on. I'm doing the slides for two reasons. One, to keep the orb record going of how many weeks in a row we can put slides up during the sermon. And two, there's three people we're going to look at here. Who was the first one? That is, who knows who that is?
Jared.
Who said, that's Spartacus, right? So if you've seen that movie, Kirk Douglas, the older one, yes. If you've seen that movie, and you go back, and when we go back together to the Greco-Roman world, you can use that as your jumping off point. All right, the next one. Who's that guy?
Governor.
I heard Arnold. That's completely wrong. Who knows who that is? Charlton Heston. Thank you, Andy. Who's seen that movie? Okay. Good enough. And one more. Hopefully. This side knows that one a lot better than the other two. My hope is, those are, besides the fact that I really sincerely enjoy all those movies, they actually offer really good pictures of what life was like back then. Other than that, these people all rise to such great heights and are incredibly powerful people. That probably didn't happen a whole lot back then. But the point is, they were all, at one point in those stories, in those movies, people that had a very common, difficult lives. Does that make sense? So when I start explaining kind of a typical life back in the Roman Empire, and we go through this scenario together, you can use kind of what you remember from those movies to help you along, all right? So let's pretend for a moment you're a typical person looking like one of these guys in the Greco-Roman world. You belong to a small kingdom just outside the vast Roman Empire, all right? Now keep in mind that this is a different world. It's not democracies, it's kingdoms. And you're a soldier in this small kingdom. And you live a regular life in your small kingdom world, and you're a soldier, and you're constantly fighting. And constantly in your vision and in your sight is the threat of the vast Roman Empire that all around you keeps conquering and taking over other small kingdoms in your area. Okay? So that's your life. You're a soldier in this kingdom, knowing that there's a huge, huge kingdom that will one day probably come and get you. Before that happens, though, one day, you're fighting with another small kingdom, and something happens. You're a soldier who gets captured by invading tribes or barbarians or some other group, some other kingdom that you're fighting with. You get captured. And what happens, and this is quite common in the Roman Empire, or in this Greco-Roman world, as a captive, this is what happens to you. They don't just kill you. They decide instead to keep you alive. And what they do is, when the battle's all done, the kingdom that just conquered you, they offer your home country, they offer to sell you back. They put a ransom on your head, and your own country has a chance to redeem you. Quite often, this is what would happen after battles, that the prisoners that were taken, if the country that took them didn't want them but wanted to make money or enhance their kingdom in some way, they would put out a ransom for these soldiers, and the country they belonged to could buy them back. So that's what happens to you in your life. You're a soldier taken captive, and there's a price that's paid to redeem you. You might have heard the word redemption or redeem in the Bible. That's what it comes from. It comes from a soldier who was captured and bought back for a price. So you were taken captive, and your home country paid a certain specific price to buy you back and bring you back to your country. So you're a soldier again in this country. But after a few more years of being this tiny country in the vast Roman world, Rome finally comes. Rome finally reaches your territory. And what happens is, they take over your nation. And you're taken captive. And you're taken prisoner. And this time, you're not redeemed. But what happens is, you're taken as a slave. You guys remember those movies? In all three of those movies, those people are slaves at some point. So try to imagine what their life is like. Now, what happens is, you're taken to Rome. And in Rome, in the Roman world, in the Roman Empire, the city of Rome, 85 to 90% of all the people there were slaves. So that's what's happened with your life. You were a soldier for your country, and then Rome came and got you, and now you're a slave, and you come to Rome, and you're put up for sale, and someone pays a price to buy you, and now you are their property. Does that make sense? Were you all with me on that? Okay. Now, I want us to think about the implications of that. What was your life like? If you asked that person, if you asked that soldier, what value does your life have? Here's what his answer would probably be. Well, I had value. My value is my value I have for my country as a soldier. Okay, that would be one of his answers. And then his other answer would be, my value is the price that they paid to buy me back, or the price I was paid for when I became a slave. So now my value is whatever was paid for me. If they said to that individual, who does your body belong to? He would have said, at first he would have said, my body belongs to my country. That's what my body is right now. I'm a soldier in my country fighting for the country's purposes. And when you asked him when he became a slave in Rome, he would have known very specifically that his body did not belong to him. His body belonged to the master who bought him. If you asked him what were his purposes in life, his answer would be, my purpose is whatever my country's purpose was. And then when he became a slave, his answer would have been, my purpose is whatever my master tells me to do. And if I don't do that, I'm probably in a whole heap of trouble. So my purposes aren't my own. My purposes are whatever the master says my purposes are. If you asked him what his future was all about, what his future was going to be like, his answer when he was a soldier probably would have been, my future is whatever my country's future is. My future is fighting until my country doesn't want to fight anymore. That's what my country has for me to do. That's what I'll be doing. And when he was a slave, if you asked him, what is your future? What does your future hold? Who does your future belong to? He would have said, my future isn't determined by me at all. My future is completely determined by the master who now owns me. All right, now, that's what life was like in the Greco-Roman world for probably the vast majority of people in the Roman Empire. Certainly there were kings and there were masters, but the majority of people were probably in that realm of soldier or slave. Now, I want to ask us some of the same questions in our world. If you were to ask people in our world, who do they belong to? What would their answers be? I tried to think about this and kind of bring this into our own world. Now, the first problem that we encounter is we don't live in a world with kings and masters, at least not in our relative American democracy context, right? And we live in a very, very different system. So, like, there's not quite the easy parallels. Like, we certainly wouldn't call the president an equivalent to the king, right? Because we're a democracy. Our answers would be very, very different. So I'm trying to think through, if we ask the question today, who do we belong to? What do you think the answer would be? I think if we asked most people who they belong to, you'd either get a blank stare of like, I don't really know. I think when we break it down to the base level of who we belong to, the answer in our culture, in our world, would be that I belong completely to myself. That's kind of the principles of democracy, that we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness on our own terms, right? The pervading idea in our world would never be that you would say, oh, I belong to someone else. Your answer would always probably be, I live and die to myself. The person I belong to is me. What I want to do with my body is completely up to me. What I want to do with my purposes, whatever purpose I find in life, I'm free to do so. Because it's my life, it's my purposes, it's my future. All that I have in all this world, who I belong to, is myself. Would you agree with that? If you looked around this world, if you talked to your friends, if you talked to different people that you knew and asked them, who do they belong to? I bet over and over again, either they might not say this, but if you looked at their lives, how they live, how they wouldn't use their body as if it belonged to someone else. They'd use it as if it belonged to them entirely, right? They wouldn't sit and think, oh, my life's completely tied up in other people's purposes. They would always say, no, I'm looking for purpose and meaning in my own life. They wouldn't say, oh, well, value is given to me by something else. They'd say, no, I have value because I'm a valuable person. If they said their future belonged to someone else, could you imagine saying that to a high school student today? Your future belongs to someone else, doesn't belong to you. No, the idea is that we belong entirely to ourselves. That's what we feel entitled to as our right, as democratic American citizens. We belong to ourselves. At the end of the day, we live and die to ourselves and belong to no one. So in our world, if you ask someone who is king and who is master of your life, your answer would almost always certainly be yourself. Now, as Christians here, seeking to know Christ, as this community of grace given to us by God that sits here tonight, we have to ask ourselves the same question. Who do we belong to? And we look and we see that in Greco-Roman times, people believed they probably belonged, and they would know that they belonged to a king or master. And in our world, the ruling thought would be that we belong to ourselves. But as Christians, as this community, we have to go and hear what the scriptures say about who we in fact belong to. Now, I'd like you to open up with me to page. We're going to look at Galatians 4. That's on page 947. Then we're going to skip over to about a page over in Ephesians real quick after that. Before I get there, I want to just kind of say a few things here. That question, who do we belong to? It was a question that the New Testament church wrestled with. Paul, the person we're going to be looking at, we're going to look at a few of his verses. We're not going to look at the whole passages. That would take a long time, but this is a theme that comes up over and over again in Paul. And there's a question. The question of who we belong to is answered and talked about in these passages. And Paul has some really radical ideas in his time that I think are the same beliefs about our world today that I want to read and look at. All right. This is Paul writing to a church in Galatia. And then we're going to look at a few other passages where Paul talks to other churches. And this is Paul just giving this advice and trying to explain to the churches he interacts with what Christ has done and what's going on in the world. So this is kind of Paul's view of the world and the state of mankind when he looks at the world. This is chapter 4 in Galatians on 947, verse 2. All right? Or verse 3, I apologize. I'm just going to read verse 3. So with us, while we were minors, we were enslaved to the elemental spirits of the world. Now flip over to 949. Just one more page over. And see chapter 2, From Death to Life, there? I want to read a few verses there as well. I'm going to start reading in verse 1, and I'll read the first three or four verses. This is Paul looking at the world and the state of man. You were dead through the trespasses and sins in which you once lived, following the course of this world, following the ruler of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work among those who are disobedient. All of us once lived among them in the passions of our flesh, following the desires of flesh and senses, and we were by nature children of wrath like everyone else. Okay, stop there. Paul looks at the world he's in. The world, where the claim is that Caesar is king, and that you belong to the Roman Empire, and that you have a master who you belong to, and you are a slave or a soldier in this world. Paul looks at that world, and did you see some of those phrases? Elemental spirits and powers of the air. That sounds a little confusing. Do you guys remember those words that I read? Paul looks at that world, and the world he sees, and he says, you don't really belong to Caesar. What you belong to, what the problem is in the society as this broken, fallen world, is you belong to the ideas and the systems of your day in this broken world. You belong to the elemental spirits of this world, which is just kind of a fancier way of saying what this world goes after, what this world believes and hopes in. That's what you belong to. You belong to this system where you are enslaved. You are enslaved and following after the things that this world is passionate about, the things that this world desires, the things that this world longs for. That's what Paul said to that community. That's what Paul was saying to that world, that apart from God, that's what they belong to. They belonged essentially to sin. They belonged to a way of living that was apart from God, a system that was totally out of place with who God is and what God has done. Now, if Paul looked at our world, a world in which we say we belong completely to ourselves, I believe Paul would say almost essentially the same exact thing. He would say, no, in this world, I look at this world where people sitting around and they think they belong to themselves and they can do whatever they want as long as they don't hurt other people and they live and die to themselves. He would say, no, all you're doing is living and going after what your world today, what your sinful world that you live in goes after. You're longing after the same desires of the flesh and the same passions that this world's passionate about. You don't belong to yourself. You belong to all the things that your world goes after. And I think he has a terrific point. We would say that everyone in this world is valuable, right? But the truth is, when we look at our world, some people are given immensely more value in our society. We make idols of people, and like the people we showed earlier. People think Russell Crowe has immensely more value. He's popular. He's a gazillionaire. Our world, if you looked at our world, does our world, which will say that everyone's created equal and everyone has value, but if you look and live and think and see all that's going on in this world, does this world scream that everyone has the same value? Or do we give some people value and do we decrease other people's value? If you looked at this world where we say everyone has purpose and everyone has futures, and we would all say that, and we would say everyone's special and beautiful and wonderful. But when you look at this world, what happens is we belong to other things. We run after whatever is popular. We run after whatever this world says we need and wants and thinks. We don't belong to ourselves. But we belong to what Paul would call the elemental, the power of the spirit of the air. The things that work in our world that are keeping us away from God. The things that drive us away from God's goodness. That's who we belong to. Paul says that we are enslaved to that and we are following after that. The ways of this world is kind of how he puts it. Now, I want to turn to one more passage. And that is page, if you have a, you can go to, it's page 928, or 929. And this is 1 Corinthians. It's another church that Paul wrote to. So Paul looks at this world and he says, the world kind of in its natural state, that when we look at the world that we're in, we see that people as a whole, we're ensnared and we follow after kind of the ways of this world and what this world values and what this world longs for. Paul is speaking to these churches, though, and he wants to declare to them something. And it's what I want to declare tonight and declare to all of us. And it's something we need to know and hear and remember always. This is verse 19 in chapter 6. And this is Paul talking to a church probably very, very similar to ours. Probably not a big church. Just one of the first communities of faith following after Christ. And here's what he says to them. Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, which you have from God? And now hear these words. And that you are not your own, for you were bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body. When Paul sits down and writes to these churches, what he wants them to know, he looks at the whole world and sees it, people that don't know the truth. And he says to the Christians and that he's writing to, and what I want you to know tonight, that as followers of Christ, that we are not our own, but we were bought with a price. Now, I want to think about that for a second. The truth in our world as Christians is that we belong not to anyone else but Jesus Christ. And we were bought with a price. What does that mean? If you remember, I spoke earlier that about the story of the soldier who was ransomed and redeemed. This is what Christ believes his mission was. And this is in the Gospels. Christ was kind of explaining to his followers what he came to this earth to do. And he said, I didn't come to this earth to be served, but I came to serve and to give my life as a ransom for many. This is what we believe is at the heart of the Christian faith, that Jesus Christ saw a broken, sinful world, a world where people had rejected God and gone after their own plans and gone after their own ideas. And Christ, what he did is he died on the cross to pay the price to restore this world. When we say you are bought with a price, when Paul declares that you are bought with a price, what he is saying is Jesus Christ paid a price for sin and for your life. So when Christ went to the cross, his body and blood was the price paid to buy you back from death and to redeem you. That means that us, all of us, this whole world today, Christ died for the sins of this whole world, to buy them back from death and to redeem them. That means that we stand today, regardless of what we think, purchased by Christ, redeemed by Jesus Christ. That means that we belong to Christ and he is Lord and we are his possession. That's the declaration of the Christian faith, that Jesus Christ is Lord. That means our lives belong completely to him. He paid the price for us. What we're going to look at in the upcoming weeks is the implications of that, and I want to just touch on those tonight. I want you to think about how life would be different if we lived by that truth, that we belong to Jesus Christ. I spoke earlier about what is our value. If you don't belong to Christ, or if you believe that you establish your own value, you might absolutely love yourself and give yourself a really high value and see your life as extremely valuable. You might not see your life extremely valuable. You might look to others and hope that others will tell you how great you are and establish your value. But if you belong to Jesus Christ, your value is set and established. Your value is the price that Christ paid for you, which was his very flesh and blood. In Christ, if you belong to Christ, your value is Christ's very death, the price that was paid. You are of infinite, immeasurable worth in Christ. Now, that one sounds great. We're going to look at another one in 2 weeks. If you belong to yourself, then you can do whatever you want with your body. But if Christ owns you, if you are Jesus Christ's possession, if he's paid the price for you and redeemed you, then what you do with your body isn't yours to decide, but his. Your body belongs to Jesus Christ. What you do with your body, the what you spend your time on, what your eyes behold, what you put into your body, what comes out of your body, if that belongs to you, you can do whatever you want with it. But if it belongs to Christ, then to live in such a way that you think you own your body is to rebel against who the Lord of this world really is to rebel against Jesus Christ himself. If you look at this world and believe that you decide your own purposes and you decide your own future, but if you look and see that, then if you see that you belong only to yourself, then you might get all sorts of thoughts and ideas about what your purposes are going to be and what your future is going to be. But if you belong to Christ, if Jesus Christ is Lord, then you have a purpose already established and set for you. Jesus Christ, who redeemed you and bought you back, has given your life purpose and meaning. And we're going to talk about that in a few weeks, that there is a purpose for your life that is real and powerful. And the one who you belong to has real plans for your life and has called you to be about something with your life. And that is a community, what we're going to look at in a few weeks. And to look, our purposes are the very same purposes that Christ has, because we belong to him. And then we're going to look at your future. Who does your future belong to? Your future, if it belongs to Christ, is established. Christ has a plan and a hope and a belief about your future because of who you are. That is what we're going to be looking at in the next few weeks. And I challenge you to go home and start thinking about that. To sit and think through, all right, maybe I've never sat and looked through this idea before. Maybe I proclaim and believe that Jesus Christ is Lord, but it's not something I've ever really thought out. Begin thinking about that as we talk about in the upcoming weeks. If we belong as individuals and a community to Jesus Christ, what does that mean about our lives? Think about that. What does it mean about our value? What does it mean about our bodies, our purposes, and our future? Dwell on that in the upcoming weeks. And as a community, our hope is that we would come to know and see more and more who we belong to and what he has in store for us. I want to read one more passage that I think one more time that Paul was talking to a different church community. He was talking to the church at Rome. And he's explaining how his life is completely bound up in who Christ is. And you don't have to turn there. I'm just going to read it. I just want you to listen. And then I'll close with this. Hear these words. We do not live to ourselves. And we do not die to ourselves. If we live, we live to the Lord. And if we die, we die to the Lord. So then, whether we live or whether we die, we are the Lord's. For to this end, Christ died and lived again, so that he might be the Lord of both the dead and the living. Let's pray.